from GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew. And together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and it's definitely games this
time. It is a lot of games this time.
Yeah.
We're recording this one a little bit earlier than we would have. I think this was our last episode last year, mm-hmm. but we've decided to record it an episode early this year because there's a certain film coming out quite soon, which we're going to want to do an episode on, I think.
Yeah.
It's the Tossers 2017.
Yeah, so Drew's donned his tux.
Yeah.
I'm looking glam.
Yeah.
We've got
the little envelopes with just sort of gold lining, and we're going to pull the cards out. it's our game of the year and game of the game aspects of the year awards. Yes.
So some interesting categories.
Because
I'd forgotten what our categories were last year, and so I was like, "Oh well, I'll note them down. Listen to last year's show," and I was like, "Those are some interesting categories."
Yeah, and I think we preserved most of them in last year. We've retired a couple of them, but there's also new stuff. Stay tuned. Look out for all of those. Or one of those.
Okay. So shall we get started? So first category is for biggest surprise of the year.
Yeah.
Do you want to get us going?
Yeah, I'll start. My biggest surprise this year was Resident Evil 7, which I'm surprised came out this year. It feels like a lot longer since that came out. I mean, I've been a Resident Evil fan since I started video games. A little bit after, because I was a bit young for them when I started playing video games. Anyway, and I held on to that series for a lot longer than everybody else did, I think. But Resident Evil 6 was a disaster of a game. Just really shouldn't even have been released in the state that it was in. It was just so bad. When they announced a reboot, I was kind of skeptical, but they really pulled it off, and they did something new and different and not perfect, but it was still... I was just so surprised by how good that game turned out to be.
Okay, well, that's always good. So, but that's a good nod for anyone who kind of had given up on it.
If you fell out after a sort of Resident Evil 4 and 5 like I did. Actually, most people loved Resident Evil 4, but it's kind of the first step on the decline, if you ask me. Resident Evil 7 really sort of takes it back to its roots in a really cool way.
Okay, cool. So my biggest surprise of 2017 was the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, which isn't even a game. That's a surprise.
I was skeptical when it was all released, this sort of weird hybrid thing with bits that click on and off, you could play it at a basketball court or a roof terrace garden party in Manhattan. They've proved me wrong. Nintendo is quite good at doing that quite often, and it's been a huge success. It's had some really great games, and I think everyone who owns a Switch is an incredibly happy console owner this year.
I can attest to that. Yeah. I mean, we did a whole episode on the announcement trailer, didn't we? Or at least half of one. I can't remember what structure we actually did.
Yeah.
And I was kind of skeptical about it too. I can't remember what we actually said, and I imagine if I went back to listen to that episode, I'd be sort of proved wrong about what I said, and maybe I was really excited about it the whole time. But
I think you were definitely more positive than I was.
Fair enough, yeah. I ended up buying one a few months ago, and it's really surprising how good that console is, given how sort of idiosyncratic and strange and Nintendo-y it is. I've already got about 5 or 6 games for it, having owned it for a month, and they've all been really, really good, and they've been a lot of fun.
Excellent.
So, yeah,
and I think it's done, it's given the industry as a whole a real boost. We've had one of our best financial years. The financials came out this week, and we're actually upgraded from the forecast, which is quite something in these times.
Yeah.
These times we live in.
Yeah. It's almost as if people are looking for escapism more than ever for some reason.
It almost is. Yeah. And where better to go than Nintendo for that?
Yeah.
So the second category is wow moment.
Yeah.
So shall I take this one? Last year we alternated. So my biggest wow moment was the bathtub scene in What Remains of Edith Finch, the sort of whimsical indie game from Giant Sparrow. And I'm still don't want to give too much away of this game, because I want everybody to play it and have the same experience I had. And so the bathtub scene is from the perspective of a baby, and that's probably all I'll tell you. So it's a baby in a bathtub with some rubber ducks, and it's this kind of incredible Fantasia style scene, which is really joyous and whimsical, and then takes you to a really, really low, dark place. And it's just so well written, and it's just beautiful. Because you know, at one point you're smiling and just you're almost like a child yourself, because it's just so whimsical and incredible when you figure out what you've got to do in that scene, and then it just sort of takes you to this other place, because these are sort of you sort of dark gothic tales that What Remains of Edith Finch, and I just thought it was a fantastic bit of game design.
And it's so much once you figure out what you're doing, it controls so well. It's so much fun to do that bit as well. It really does feel like you're kind of conducting the sort of Fantasia orchestra kind of thing. It's so beautiful. I really enjoyed that bit. That, and when I was thinking about Edith Finch for these awards, that was the bit that I remembered, like the standout bit, my favorite bit in that game.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so I've gone for mine's quite a small one. It's and again, I don't really want to spoil anything for anyone, but I think this game has been out long enough now that we're beyond the point where we need to be able to discuss things openly. And it's just I think it's the end of the second level of Sonic Mania, which is the Mean Bean Machine boss fight. And it's just such a surprising moment. Basically what happens is you end the level and you get to the Robotnik boss as you normally would, except this time, instead of being a combat fight, it's a level from the old Mega Drive / Genesis puzzle game, Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, which was kind of the Sonic Tetris / Columns clone that came out at the time. And it just sort of perfectly encapsulates what Sonic Mania was trying to do, taking all of these old elements and recombining them into something that's really new and really fresh and exciting and fun. I was in love with the game from that point on.
Excellent. Yeah. That's what a good wow moment should do.
Yeah.
So next up is best art.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I guess it's my turn to go first again.
Yeah.
I've gone for Cuphead, which, we've all seen the art from Cuphead. It got it pretty heavily publicized after it was announced in that indie Microsoft thing. It really did deliver on those sort of trailer visuals. It's really gorgeous. It's really well done throughout. And it's there's never a point where it kind of cracks open and you see like the video game inside. It's always seamless. It always looks like a cartoon. Every animation segues perfectly into every other animation, and it's really gorgeous. And like there have been quite a few articles recently about how it's kind of rooted in some very problematic and racist imagery that originated in those 1930s and 40s cartoons, and that is like unfortunate. You can definitely see where that's tracked into the art of this game, but like it doesn't feel like it feels like it's been done. Obviously it's subliminally done, it's come through subliminally, and it's not overtly supposed to be that. It's just those influences, and it does kind of spoil it a little bit, but it's still just gorgeous, you know.
Yeah It's one of those things that as soon as you see it, it's sort of beautifully obvious. But nobody's done it before.
We've said
why
this before,
hasn't anyone used that aesthetic before? Because, Yeah, so that was an obvious, it's obviously going to be top of people's aesthetics lists, I think, for this year. My best art is going to Night in the Woods, because I think it's just a, it was an instantly iconic game. People were making felt models of the characters, and that, it just like people really took those characters to heart and, created loads of fan art and fan crafts because the art itself is almost like paper craft.
Papercraft, yeah.
But then it has some sort of translucency as well in some of the scenes, sort of trees in the foreground, or be sort of partly transparent, and yeah, it's just a really beautiful game to look at, and suits the characters so well. It's again one of those things, one of those art styles that's kind of familiar but is also completely individual to that game.
Yeah, like it takes its influences from all over as well. I was reading about this one. I was
Oh, right, yeah.
and the one thing that I read, which I suddenly realized, oh yeah, that's where I remember this from, is it looks kind of like a papercraft version of the old Richard Scarry books, which I used to read when I was little. I don't know if you ever read the sort of Scarry Town.
I know the name, but I don't remember the art style.
No, I
I
mean,
remember the name.
I
Oh,
don't
I'll have to
remember
have a
it.
look.
I don't remember it particularly in detail myself, but as soon as someone mentioned it, I said, yeah, that's exactly what it reminded me of.
Yeah, it is like a children's picture book
Yeah,
kind of
exactly.
style, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a fantastic looking game.
And I've given it sort of an honorable mention in my sort of best art category as well, along with Rhyme, which I also thought was really gorgeous. So.
And Monument Valley 2,
Oh yeah, still haven't played that.
which was gorgeous. I'm playing that at the moment on my phone whenever I do a train journey.
That's fair enough.
And that is really be I mean, it's Monument Valley, so it's going to be beautiful, and it's just more beauty. So next up is Favorite World. So this is can be sort of a favorite environment, or a place you'd like to spend time in, and a world that you just like to be immersed in. So is it me up this?
It is.
So my favorite world is Rhyme, which is the sort of eco style, boy on an island alone with some puzzles, but it's this beautiful sort of sun bleached Mediterranean island with sort of azure skies and white stone, and sort of a gentle breeze, and it's just a really lovely, relaxing, sunny world. Of course, it does go to darker places as well towards the end, but a lot of time is spent, with picking apples and herding pigs or whatever they are, warthogs or something.
Following that really gorgeous, like, orange fox, which, so yeah.
Oh yeah. I should have a little dip into that again because I'd forgotten about the fox.
I mean, I didn't play the end of it, so I only saw the sort of sun-bleached, gorgeous wrath of it. So it was a very, calming game for me.
And then inside, the architecture inside was really cool as well. When you get into those indoor sections, had this kind of sort of brass, sort of steampunk kind of, really beautifully detailed. Yeah, it was a lovely game.
Oh yeah, me. I'm gonna do one as well. So yeah, mine was again, mine's not so much a world as a specific environment, but I really enjoyed the space station in Prey, which I've unforgivably
Sorry,
forgotten the
it's
name
just
of.
like we've gone from one extreme to
We have, yeah.
the
From gorgeous open fantasy world to a really sort of
Yeah.
industrial metallic environment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that game sort of did location really well. And I remember when we were originally discussing this game on the podcast before it came out, when it was announced, I noted that it looked like Die Hard on a spaceship, and the spaceship even kind of looked like Nakatomi Plaza from Die Hard, in that it was basically a skyscraper in space. And it kind of absolutely delivered on that.
Brilliant.
Yeah, in that it's this contiguous environment which you, over the course of the game, you explore in a very sort of natural and a way that makes sense, and you get a really good sense of the geography of it in the same way that you do in kind of System Shock 2 and the other immersive sims it probably sort of takes its cues from.
Excellent.
Yeah. Sorry, I enjoyed that. I've got some more honourable mentions for this one as well.
Oh, do you? Go.
Yeah, I've got Tacoma for the same reasons, basically, and Horizon Zero Dawn, which...
I don't think it
delivered fully on the premise, but I really like the premise of it being, you know, this post-apocalyptic world in which our civilization is kind of the ruins of it.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked the sort of ruined skyscrapers and things that they didn't recognize anymore what they did, and because weren't there wind turbines there and stuff? Our futile attempts at keeping our civilization alive.
I mean, I'll admit, I've only recently picked this game up because it was one of those ones where we had that Duel of the Open Worlds episodes where you'd been playing Horizon Zero Dawn and I'd been playing Breath of the Wild, and I've finally gotten around to getting Horizon as well. And I've only found a little bit of that stuff. Like, I've seen ruined cars in the water, and there's one of the collectathon quests is ancient vessels, which are just mugs with stuff on them.
Yeah, really, that's quite nice. They trade in things like old watches and stuff like that. Sort of another honourable mention in that category, which was, I suppose, my close second, was Assassin's Creed Origins. Mm-hmm. They've done an incredible job of making me feel like I've walked through ancient Egypt. As far as I'm concerned, I know what ancient Egypt was like. They kind of niftily avoided the sort of slavery. I was thinking about it the other day, and I was like, hey, there's not much. Yeah, there doesn't seem to be much misery.
No.
Considering the amount that there must have been to like carve out these huge bits of stone. And if the Bible's anything to go by. I mean, it's a beautiful world that I enjoy spending a lot of time in, especially as an eagle, just soaring over and watching flocks of flamingos take off and, crocodiles fight and, all sorts of cool stuff. It's a beautiful, beautiful world. So our next category is Best Sequel.
Yep. I've got best franchise entry as well. What I've got it written down as, which I suppose makes more sense for my game, because I've gone for Breath of the Wild, which is not a direct sequel to any of the previous Zeldas, but depending on how you interpret it. Nintendo got a lot of credit with Breath of the Wild for kind of throwing out the previous formula and doing something new. I don't think they really did that so much with... I mean, it's not Breath of the Wild that started that. They have been sort of flirting with that concept in the previous couple of Zelda games as well. Notably, they did Link Between Worlds, in which was kind of far more open than previous 2D Zeldas have been. But yeah, Breath of the Wild is really sort of takes that concept and runs with it. It throws away the idea of item-based progression, which has been kind of integral to Zelda since kind of the second or third one. And just gives you a massive open world in which you can kind of do whatever you want. And, I mean, from the beginning of the game, you can do the sort of tutorial section and then just run straight to the final boss if you want to. And you'll get killed, but you can do it. And I imagine that there's plenty of speedrun videos showing you how to just beat the game in, 5 minutes. It worked really well. And... having played Horizon Zero Dawn recently, I've been kind of comparing that game with Breath of the Wild, and I think you may have seen me post something about this on Twitter, but the thing that really bothers me about Horizon Zero Dawn is that it's a big open world, but you are told what to do the entire time. Every mission is, okay, now press your focus button to find this thing.
Yeah, it does do that.
And then
a lot.
It just kind of, it gives you a lighted trail to follow. It shows you exactly where to walk. It tells you exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild does that so much better. It doesn't tell you what to do. It gives you kind of directional hints. It says, well, there's a town over there where you might want to go there first and see what you find there. And there's, you know, the four dungeons that are at this corner of the map, but it just kind of tells you, okay, start heading in that direction and find your own way. And it does it really well, and it gives you such a sense of freedom, because I've played the opening of it twice now, and I kind of went two different ways and got a different experience both times. It's much more open than any previous Zelda game and most open world games that are being released at the moment, and I just
open world in name kind of I was kind of thinking about Assassin's Creed Origins whilst you were saying that, and it is more free than Horizon Zero Dawn. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do that leading you thing. Because sometimes you can sort of happen across a mission. I found this, you know, just on my way to somewhere else, which is quite nice. Mm. There's lots of stuff that you can kind of pick up along the way whilst you're doing something else.
Yeah.
But it definitely doesn't give as much freedom as Breath of the Wild sounds like it does. Mm. It's my turn.
Yeah.
I was going to move on to the next category.
We've done the same
this
thing.
Is yeah. Drew's guide to the games of the year. So my best sequel is that what we're doing, isn't it? Yeah. Sequel is Nier Automata. Because the original Nier had completely passed me by until I saw the teaser of this, which was, you know, just like about 10 seconds of...
Yeah.
4B walking into a room kind of thing, and so it was, you know, this flawed cult hit, you know, amongst a very niche pocket of gamers. Mm-hmm. And Nier Automata has become this big kind of, although it's a divisive game, some people love it, some people just like are just like, huh?
Yeah.
Or yeah, I wish I loved it like everybody else seems to.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly that people hate it, people are just kind of like a bit nonplussed and sort of
I mean, that's certainly been my position just reading the huge reactions to this one.
Because I've seen that a lot of people have gone, right, I'm going and playing Nier Automata and I just don't get it.
No,
it's not that they hate it or they can say that it's bad or it's become this sort of, you know, it's really improved upon the things like the combat and things. I've, you know, as far as I haven't played Nier, but that's what I've read, that the combat is much much better, and it's just a really fun game. It makes me feel awesome, makes me feel like I'm really skilled, which I'm not. but it's not easy either. To get to your first save point, you really have to work at it to get to that point where you do get to a safe space. Because I was like, God, I just can't get through this first level, and like, how do you save? And I looked it up and people were like, yeah, you just have to, like, you know, conserve all your health, and you have to, you know, do this, and you have to sort of strategize a bit. And I was like, okay, so I had to just knuckle down and do it, and it's so satisfying when you get to that point and then you're a bit safer. But the great thing about it is also that it's a game that kind of switches itself up on you. So it's, you know, in the sort of demo, those opening levels, it feels like it's just a sort of action RPG, kind of not quite a sort of side-scrolling shooter, but almost that kind of sort of gameplay feel to it.
Yeah, so I mean, I got like a sort of Devil May Cry vibe out of it. Which,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. Sort of
really
hack and slash. A beautiful hack and slash with bigger and bigger bosses to fight. Mm. But then it kind of throws you into this RPG with this sort of open world map, and and so then you're talking to people and you're in settlements and you've got different things to do, and it's just it's like four games in one, it's amazing because it's like, wow, this has really shifted. This wasn't what I was expecting from the demo. Because I'd have happily played the demo for like 10 levels because I loved it. But yeah, it's a really interesting game and it's really beautiful. I like the character design, even though there are panty shots, lots of panty shots. I still want that dress.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of kind of sort of early 2000s style game. It's got that feel to it, which is, I suppose, quite nostalgic for me. Just like pure fun game mechanic kind of.
Yeah, there were a lot of sort of PS2 and Xbox games which kind of followed same thing of Devil May Cry mostly. There was that Final Fantasy game which did the same thing, the Vincent Valentine one.
There was a lot of that. Yeah, because I loved Devil May Cry. So yeah, that's exactly a good... But then it becomes something more than that quite soon after the demo.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I played the demo of that game and it didn't catch my interest, and I'm starting to get interested in it again now that I hear that there's actually quite a bit more to it.
Mm-hmm.
What I did notice about that game is that people are still talking about it, at least on my Twitter timeline. And people won't shut up about that damn game. So I'm going to have to I'm going to have to just plow through it at some point just so I have a frame of reference.
Yeah, just so you can judge whether they're right or not.
Yeah. I mentioned it the other day. I just said, said some casual offhanded comment about, oh yeah, Nier Automata, everyone went nuts over that. I didn't really get it. And then I got about three or four different people just messaging me saying, oh no, you should like it because of this. People want to defend that game. People want you to play it.
Yeah, people do love it. I mean, I love it. I'm happy if other people don't like it. Yeah. That's fine. But I really enjoyed it. Cool. I think it's beautiful. Okay, our next category is for most original game of 2017.
Yeah, and this is a very special occasion because it is the first ever.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the first ever double-handed tosser. We both leave that one for a moment. Yeah, yeah. We've both gone for the same thing.
We have. It's like ding, 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 ding.
And yeah, it's kind of a clear choice, I think, because there's been nothing like this game that I can remember in recent memory.
No,
it's What Remains of Edith Finch.
It is indeed.
Which is how would you describe? What that game is.
It's an anthology of short stories. And I probably only know the way to describe it because I interviewed I can't remember his name from Giant Sparrow.
Yeah.
And so we talked about it a lot. And he's a really interesting person to talk to and has loads of really interesting influences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I describe it as an anthology of short stories. That's how he approached it anyway, or they approached it.
And they've all got kind of this, they've all got such varying sort of themes and designs and influences. Like there's some Wes Anderson in there, there's Edward Gorey, there's just all sorts of...
It's sort of American Gothic
meets
sort of American whimsy, that whole sort of... without looking anything like Tim Burton, which is what everybody thinks American Gothic is, but it isn't. That's just what it looks like when it's ripped off from other places.
Yeah.
But that's another controversial opinion for another time.
I don't think that's particularly controversial anymore. I think everyone now is as sick of Tim Burton as I was 5 years ago. not to be the before it was cool guy, but I've hated Tim Burton a lot longer than everybody else.
It does storytelling in so many different ways. It's incredible. So it has bits of Unfinished Swan. It has those elements in it, and then it's the way that the storytelling and the gameplay just marry as well, and they're all really original. All the little vignettes are so different from each other. Because he was saying, I can't really tell you what it's like because they're all so different. And before you've played the game, you're just like, okay, how different can they be?
Yeah. And yeah, they get surprisingly different. Again, I don't want to go and play this game because I don't want to spoil it or anything. But there's one near the end, which is just, it's kind of an isometric bit where you kind of walk through this massive long kingdom, and it's just, you get kind of halfway through it and you're like, this is massive. This is way bigger than, you know, any of these other vignettes have been. And it's, yeah, it's just so surprising the way it's kind of presented. It's,
yeah, it is. It's a joy.
Absolutely.
And the next category is for best writing.
Yeah.
And it's ding, ding, ding again.
Yeah, we didn't have one at all last year, and we've got two in a row. It's another double hander.
Yeah.
We've both gone for Night in the Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was fantastically written. So
yes.
And I will say that there are, I think there are some problems with kind of the main plot, I felt. Yeah, I know you haven't sort of finished it, so I'm not going to say anything, but it kind of didn't hold together for me. But the individual character writing and the dialogue, it's someone on my Twitter feed described it as the most screen-capable game of all time, because there are so many great lines and great little pieces of writing that just stand on their own. And like, and it's all in small speech bubbles as well, so it's all very concise and very, just very, very well done.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Yeah, because I was going to add the caveat that, because I was thinking about it and I was like, can I go with Night in the Woods? I was like, well, I haven't finished it. And I was thinking, well, even if the whole story arc doesn't, you know, say it's got the sort of Firewatch syndrome where the ending doesn't pay off quite as well, I'd still probably say the writing is brilliant and my favourite of the year because, well, I wrote a whole column piece just on the opening line of that game because it just set up the it's such a brilliant opening line. I was just thinking, what other great opening lines are there in video games? Because you get that in films, but you don't get that in video games. That's not how people choose to introduce their characters. They're always doing something, you know, fantastic with explosions or whatever. And it just like completely encapsulated the character in one line, and it goes on to do that all the way through.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. Can you tell me what the line is? I've completely forgotten, and I'm wondering, what was it?
The line is, May is sitting, she gets off the bus at the bus station, and she just goes, well, that's great.
Oh, right.
And it's basically the fact that nobody's come to pick her up.
Yeah.
And it just sums up the fact that she's a bit of a loser and she's down on herself. And, you know, it's just everything about her character summed up in that one moment. Yeah
you're right. And not to spoil what I'm going to give one of my awards to this year, but I'm going to talk about that a bit later as well.
All right. So,
Speak of the devil. The next category is sorry, unless you had more to say on Night in the Woods.
No, I didn't. I've said enough, I think.
Yeah.
I waxed lyrical about that. Okay. So the category is for best male, non-binary, female. You know, it's those categories for our favourite character type people.
Yes. So because we've kind of both gone for multiple characters from the same game in our choices here. So rather than do them separately, do you want to do your two first, and then I'll do my two?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So my two are Bayek and Aya from Assassin's Creed Origins, and for me they are the power couple of video games in 2017. I mean, they are up there with Nate and Elena. They're a really great couple who I haven't even finished the game yet. I'm totally invested in them, and I want more games with them in, basically. They are, you know, like I said when we talked about Assassin's Creed Origins on the other episode, they're just this kind of, they're this hot, sexy couple who really care and support each other. They're just everything that you want when you're in a relationship. You know, they just, like, she's strong and independent and does her own thing, and you know, he goes off and does his thing, and then when they come together, they kind of rush into each other's arms because they miss each other so much, and then they shag on a rooftop in the sunset in ancient Egypt, and it's all wonderful and beautiful, and yeah, it's yeah, they're just a great couple. Yeah, who kind of have intelligent conversations about the politics of the day, and you know, his mission is driven by her politics, basically, because she supports Cleopatra, so he gets behind that, and you know, they're just a really great couple.
Yeah, I have very little to say about them because I have not played, Assassin's Creed Origins. But you know, I'm perfectly willing to take your word for it. So.
Yeah, it's like couple goals, basically, Bayek and Aya.
Alright, cool. And I have gone for, as I hinted about 2 minutes ago, all my best male and female characters are both from Night in the Woods. So for best male character, I've gone with Greg. I kind of had a lot of trouble picking out a best male character this year. I was going through the list of stuff I played, and there was not a lot that... Nobody that really stood out. Nobody particularly interesting. No. Greg is kind of a default choice because he is kind of one of the funniest characters in that game. He's a lot of fun to kind of hang out with, which is what you do with him in the course of the game.
Which one's Greg?
He's the fox guy who works at... not the
video shop.
No, that's Angus works at the video shop. He is Greg's partner. Greg is the kind of rebellious, anarchistic, very funny kind of fox guy.
Okay. And then is Angus the one who's kind of shy at parties and stuff?
He is, yeah. He's the bear guy in the hat and the glasses. He's really great. He is my honourable mention for best male character.
Yeah.
And then for my best female character, I've gone with May from Night in the Woods. So to carry on from what you said earlier about her having that opening line, which you said was, well, that's just great. You're absolutely right. That really encapsulates her so well, because she's a really complexly written character, and some of it I'm not going to talk about because it is sort of later in the game spoilers, but she's so well rounded just from the off. She's very funny, she's very charming, but immediately in the first kind of couple of days of playing that game, a couple of in-game days, you find out she's kind of self-absorbed, and she is self-destructive, and she's often quite oblivious to what's going on outside of her own bubble, in the way that, you know, young adults and teenagers are, like, just absolutely, and it all rang so true for me.
She's
just a really well-written character.
She is a really well-written character. I was playing it to remind myself. I was playing a bit this morning, and I was just thinking she's a really unusual protagonist in that way. Well, not so much in maybe TV drama or something, because you have things like Fleabag. And maybe the woman from The Good Place, you know, she's not quite as unlikable as that, sometimes you're just like, not sure I'd want to be friends with you. And then she does something nice, and you're like, okay, then,
I mean, that is... they dive deeper into that later in the game as well. There are very good reasons for why she comes off the way she does. And some of it is just, you know, being a self-absorbed teenager. There is a lot more to her and a lot more that is hinted at.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm getting back into that now that I've jumped in again. Because I kept forgetting I had it. I'm going to finish that, I think.
Yeah, they're coming out with, I think, some kind of enhanced complete edition on the Switch sometime soon, which I think I'm probably going to pick up and play again. Although, I mean, slightly off topic, I wonder if that game needs an extended edition. What I'd quite like for that game is a condensed edition, because while there's some great stuff in there, it is all spread out over kind of a lot of busy work and just walking around and traveling between locations, which...
That's one of the things I don't like about it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main criticisms that people did have of it.
Yeah, it's kind of padded by all this walking and stuff. Yeah. I was just going to say about this category that we do include non-binary characters, but we had a think and we couldn't we couldn't think of any this year.
No.
But if people have got some and they're like, oh my God, they're completely forgetting so and so, like, definitely, tell us about it because, yeah, we'd like to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that I must have played something and forgotten about it, but
You'd hope so anyway. So yeah, let us know on that one.
I do have one more honorable mention just
Okay.
to complete the set, and it's the other character from Night in the Woods, basically. Yeah, B,
May. Oh, B. Yeah, that's it.
the sardonic, sarcastic, chain-smoking alligator.
Crocodile. Yeah.
Yeah, I have no more to say about her than that, but that's just in, like, I fell in love with her entirely over the course of that game.
Yeah,
She
she's cool, and her
May is the best.
eyeshadow's cool.
It is. And what I love is she's always got that cigarette on the go, so you can always see it. Even if the game is pitch dark, there's just that little red dot which represents the end of her cigarette.
Yeah, because I'd forgotten when I picked it up this morning. I was like, she was going to fix a boiler or a furnace because Americans have like big boxes with fires in them in their basements, which is weird. Or they used to at least. But yeah, she was going to fix this furnace with a cigarette. I was just like, really? Because I used to go out with a gas man, a gas engineer. I was like, I don't think that's a good idea. But, and she seems to be a completely unqualified furnace fixer, but
Yeah,
we
that's
go.
just one of the duties that life has dumped on her, which is
Yeah,
very,
right.
very in keeping with the theme of that character.
Yeah.
But yeah, where May I think is the best character in Night of the Woods, B is my favorite character.
Yeah, I really like her as well. She's the most stylish,
She
and she's just
definitely.
like, basically, isn't she? Yeah, she's
Oh, man, I
cool.
want to play that game again now.
Well, you have to wait until we finish this, at the very least.
Have to. We've only got three more, and people know what I'm going to say. It's fine.
Soundtrack is our next category.
Okay, so yeah, I guess it's my turn to go first.
Yes.
I've gone with the Sonic Mania, which I thought had a really kind of great soundtrack. It takes the old themes from Sonic 2 and 3, and it in the first levels of the games that reference those levels, it kind of plays them straight with minor changes, and then in the second level, it remixes them and does something new with them. And yeah, it comes up with some really cool stuff. And the newly designed levels, which aren't referencing previous games, also have music which just fits exactly into a Sonic game. They really did a good job of finding the style and finding what was good about the soundtracks of those old games, and just coming up with something new and good, which they could have very easily screwed that up, but they
Yeah,
didn't.
could have made a hash of it. Yeah, my best soundtrack, I had a few that I kind of toyed with. I toyed with Horizon Zero Dawn, because it has a really Aloy's theme is really beautiful, and I used to just sit in the menu screen and listen to that, if I was going to cook dinner or something, because it is just really, really beautiful. But I'm not sure that the rest of the soundtrack, I listened to it the other day actually, whilst I was working, and it only really kind of my interest only pricks up when that theme comes back. So I'm not sure that the whole soundtrack is really as engaging. So I've gone for Nier Automata. Also, some people pronounce it differently to me.
Yeah, I would have gone with
Automata.
automata,
You say Omata, I
yeah.
say.
I say automato.
So we don't know how it's pronounced officially, but I say automata. And I went for this because when I played the demo, because the demo was just like, yeah, I'm definitely buying that. It made me feel heroic, and that was partly the sort of seamless kind of animation and the mechs and all that, but it was also the music. Just is this kind of soaring, huge orchestral pieces with these sort of Japanese choral voices kind of soaring as you're just doing amazing things. And I just thought it was fantastic, and it kind of reminded me of classic anime, a bit like Ghost in the Shell type stuff, you know, how amazing that soundtrack is, and sort of like 90s and 2000s sort of gameplay, you know, talking about PS2 games and stuff, you know, there's Devil May Cries and all those things again. It just kind of brought me back, and it's like, oh yeah, I remember these kinds of games with this amazing kind of over the top orchestral kind of and I suppose because their references aren't Hans Zimmer and you know, John Williams, you know, so they're, you know, they're bringing that sort of filmic score from a different place, and it sounds different, and yeah, I just thought it was a really integral part of my enjoyment of the game.
Yeah, cool. And
So
again, not having played it and not really remembering what the soundtrack was like in the demo, I don't have much. I do recall it kind of remind like it kind of fits in with the sort of mechanics of it in the same way that it used to in Devil May Cry and Zoe and all those. It's that really sort of free-form movement and kind of swooping, cover a lot of ground very quickly movement that the character has, which is accompanied by this sort of similar music, which kind of inspires you to play in a certain way.
Yeah, exactly, which I think is a really clever thing to be able to do. Yeah, and speaking of soundtracks, I really recommend Jessica Curry's High Score, which is on Classic FM. I don't know if our listeners in America or, you know, outside of the UK will be able to get it. It's a radio show.
No region restrictions on BBC Radio, so yeah,
It's
they
not,
should be able to get it.
it's Classic
Oh, right.
FM,
No.
not BBC,
And
so I don't
ignore the
know.
stupid thing I just said then.
But yeah, for those who don't know, Jessica Curry wrote the music for Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, Dear Esther,
All right, cool.
and co-founded the Chinese Room. So yeah, so she hosts the show looking at video game soundtracks, which is amazing for video games and the beautiful music that we have on top of our games. And because she's coming from a composer's perspective, it's really interesting her take and what she chooses and what she says about things. Yeah, and she, like, you can get on Twitter to her and recommend stuff for whatever theme it is that week. But yeah, High Score, I recommend it. It's a good one.
Cool.
Next category. Oh, we're getting to the nitty-gritty now, the last two categories.
So.
So it's favorite game, and then our final category is best game. And we differentiate between these because, Drew.
Oh, sorry. I don't have an explanation lined up. No. I think it's a pretty natural distinction to make, which a lot of people don't, because there are games that are clearly well made and clearly, really, really superbly done, which you kind of just don't enjoy as much as something that's a little bit worse. But or not that I'm suggesting that my favorite game is bad or anything, but it's just less sort of technically brilliant, and but
Just
it,
fun
yeah,
and yeah, could be easy. Yeah, it's kind of, yeah,
yeah, just.
could be the difference between reading Nabokov and, I don't know,
Yeah, The Hunger Games.
yeah, Stephen King or something. Sort of both good in their own ways, but sort of easier to kind of fall
Yeah,
into.
just have more fun with them. Okay, so we're going to start with favorite, I think. And, oh, it's my turn. No, wait, it's not. It's your turn.
It's my turn. I was gonna let you go with it, but it's fine. Yeah, so it my favorite game is Assassin's Creed Origins. I think I'm just re part of the reason is I'm just so happy they've made a good Assassin's Creed game again.
What a relief.
Yeah, so it's kind of like your Resident Evil thing. I'm just really happy because I do enjoy those games when they're good. It's one of those frustrating series when it's like, I like the core concept of this game, but you keep doing it wrong. And I know you can do it right because you did it right in Assassin's Creed 2. And this is basically Assassin's Creed 2 in ancient Egypt, with a great power couple at the center of it, which I love. It's kind of like a, you know, like I said on the show a couple of weeks ago. It's like a best of Assassin's Creed because it's got the ships in, and you know, there's lots of sailing on the Nile and stuff like that. And it's added more RPG elements, but it doesn't give you the map clutter that you've had in previous ones. And yeah, and it's just the perfect setting for an Assassin's Creed game. I mean, who doesn't want to go, you know, sort of like climbing pyramids and sort of going to see the Sphinx? And yeah, it's just, and it's beautiful, and it's beautifully researched. It's, you know, one of the things that Ubisoft does so well, and they've just done it their bestest ever, I think. Yeah,
I mean, over the course of this episode and the past couple of episodes we've done where we've mentioned it, you have completely sold me on this game as someone who's, you know, a huge Assassin's Creed skeptic, you know, describing it as Assassin's Creed 2 in ancient Egypt, which is exactly what I want.
Yeah,
it sounds like they've made some significant improvements to the things that were putting me off the previous games.
I hope so. I hope you play it and I haven't oversold it. Well, you'll tell me if I have.
Yes, I definitely will.
Tune in.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to pick that up once I get through the backlog I currently have, which is huge.
Your favorite game of the year?
My favorite game of the year, it's one that I was going to mention as sort of honorable mentions previously, but I don't think I did mention it in the end. It comes under best sort of sequel and best soundtrack. I was going to give it an honorable mention for that. It is Super Mario Odyssey, which we have talked about and came out last month now, I think. Was it last month or the month before? Anyway, recently. And I've always been a big fan of the 3D Mario games since Mario 64, which kind of didn't get surpassed as a platformer for years and years. And Odyssey is just a really great evolution and new step for the series in that it's kind of taken cues from Breath of the Wild in that it's opened up a little bit more. Not that it is an open world game, but the levels are much broader, and rather than having, you know, six specific objectives to do, which was the kind of Mario 64 formula, or three, which was the Galaxy formula, it gives you about 100 in each level and encourages you to explore, and wherever you explore you will find something to do. And they're not always interesting things. There are a couple of you kind of get variations on specific quests in each world as you go to them, and not all of them are that fun, but there's always something, and most of them are kind of fun to do. So there's just a huge amount of content in that game. There's a huge amount to unlock. There's a huge amount of sort of whimsy and fun. And it's just, I played it for, you know, 2 weeks straight after it came out, and I just never got bored of just finding new stuff in it and learning the new sort of movement controls, which you kind of develop your skills in them really well over the course of the game and realize you could have been doing way more from the start. You just weren't used to the controls yet. It's the most fun I've had with a game all year.
Sounds like a pretty perfect game.
it really is. And if and when you get a Switch, I just absolutely recommend you pick that up.
Yeah. Well, there are two games that you have to buy when you buy a Switch, so I am thinking about it, but so we are here, we are at the best game of the year category for 2017. We didn't agree on this, although we don't, because lots of, you know, sort of editorial teams and whatnot, they will, you know, literally hack it out. And I think I've read someone at Games TM say the only time we literally have fallings out is when we're agreeing on the games of the year. And we don't do that because I guess it's really hard to to do that. And we both play different things. And I think it's good to give people a broader kind of, if, you know, it gives people, it's like, oh, well, that's good too. So we have two best games, and you are up, Drew.
Yeah, and just
drum roll, please.
Yeah, just to follow on from what you just said, which was there are two Switch games that you have to buy. I think the best game released this year has to be The Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild, which is yeah, I mean, we've talked about it already, and I think I've sort of made my point on it and why I like it so much. But it is just the most kind of stunning technical and gameplay achievement this year, that they took the Zelda series and did something so fantastic and so new and so good with it. And it's a game that's so good that I've played through most of it twice. Yeah, it's really amazing. And I don't have much more to say on it that I haven't already said.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that choice as a best game of the year,
except that you're about to, so
well, I haven't played it, so
oh, fair enough. Yeah.
So that's an enormous get out for me.
So just before you do start, you're admitting that I'm right and whatever you say is just, you know, a flawed
no, I was actually shot. Thinking, but it would have to be bloody good to beat my best game of the year.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I haven't played it, but I'm still thinking that this would be my personal favourite of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So my best game of the year, it probably won't surprise many people, because I gave it 5 stars in the Guardian review I wrote.
Yeah.
And that is What Remains of Edith Finch.
Mm-hmm.
I love this game so much, and I just want everybody to play it. Don't watch a Let's Play of What Remains of Edith Finch,
no,
because you will ruin it for yourself, because it is a beautiful experience. I wrote a column about it, about how it uses magical realism in a really interesting way. I think it's, you know, I sort of come from you know, a literature background in English literature, and it just feels like a really kind of literary game to me. You know, Ian Dallas, you know, the design lead at Giant Sparrow, he has this fascination with storytelling, and you literally in his games can step into the pages of a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really love that. I really love that sort of the never-ending story style thing where you're kind of you're stepping into the book, and then you sort of, you know, breaking that sort of those walls down of like what is real and which layer of the story are we in now, and it does that so beautifully. That I loved it because it just shows us. I think What Remains of Edith Finch is going to influence a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because it did so many interesting things. I mean, how many games do you get to like sort of transmogrify into an owl, a shark, a tentacle, and that's just one section. That's
like
the
first 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. It absolutely confounds you right from the beginning, and it does that again and again, and just like in sort of like glorious ways.
It's really amazing how many ways it finds to kind of bump up against the walls of you know, which part of this is story, which part of this is real, exploring like the border of, you know, where the real thing meets the fiction, and it does it in so many different unique ways, and there are very few bits that don't work. Pretty much all of it works, and all of it is interesting and new throughout. It's a good choice.
Yeah, yours is a good choice too.
Yeah.
Because we're Team Awesome here at Argue the Toss, and we know what's what.
Exactly.
But it's like, I guess overall, it's just been a really good year again.
It has.
I think 2016 was a really good year. I had conversations with some people last year saying, there are no good games. And I was just like, what are you talking about? And then this year has just been, I think we've finally broken that thing of like having all the releases in November and December.
Yeah.
Because August was just off the scale with releases. It's like, you know, I was talking to sort of other journalists and we were like, what is going on? I'm supposed to be on holiday now, but I've got so much work coming out. Yeah, we basically have had great releases from like February right the way through to November.
Yep. No, absolutely. Have we got any honourable mentions that we haven't been able to fit into these categories? For just generally good games that in the huge numbers that they were released, we couldn't fit them into our 10 categories or whatever it is we have.
Yeah. Well, there are ones that people have loved that I haven't got to yet. And the main one is Dream Daddy. Yeah. I mean, that kind of exploded. I don't know what other people's Twitter timelines were like, but Dream Daddy was everywhere and people loved it. And, you know, it was really sort of inclusive. It had beautiful art. I probably will pick it up at some point to have a look. I'm not really into visual novel style games or dating sims particularly, but this seems to be like a really good example of those types of games. So, yeah, why not like play the best? Yeah, so it's sort of like gay single dads hooking up with each other. Sounds really cool to me.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about whether it's shown up in other people's Twitter bubbles. It doesn't seem to have on mine. There was certainly a couple of weeks buzz about it, but then it kind of died down. And when you mentioned it earlier, I'd forgotten that game came out. Like, I'd kind of forgotten about it. But
that was like the sort of like the big hit of the summer, as Queens of the Stone Age would say.
No, fair enough. That's not the sense that I've gotten from it. But,
oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Those
echo chambers. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. And then Monument Valley 2. I know I mentioned it briefly in the art section, but I'm playing that at the moment. And I just wanted more Monument Valley, and it's given me that, but then it's added new layers to the puzzles as well. Yeah. I felt like there's a much shallower learning curve on this one, which was a bit disappointing. I think for a large part of it, it's been much easier.
Yeah.
So I've played it much quicker, although it is getting a bit harder. But yeah, I think the difficulty level has dropped on Monument Valley 2.
Fair enough.
But it is still absolutely stunning. They find new ways to be stunning.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't think they could do it, but I'm just taking screenshots all the time because it's just like, oh my God, like every level is like beautiful, but they've done new, interesting things. You get two characters in some of the levels now, working on different sides of the sort of like doll's house type thing. So that's cool. There's a bit more story element to it, which I'm not sure I needed. I kind of like the ambiguity of Monument Valley, but some of the sort of emotional sort of high points are really beautifully animated. So I'm really enjoying that. And then I've just kind of I've just jumped into Animal Crossing Pocket Camp.
Yeah,
I can never remember the name. It's just like Animal Crossing something camp.
Yeah.
I jumped into that because, again, that was kind of blowing up on my Twitter feed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My Twitter feed's basically full of game developers and games journalists, and they're all just, on it. And, it's really, because I liked, we were talking about it before the show. I mean, I really loved Animal Crossing. It's a great game. And I was a bit reticent because I was like, do I really want a stripped back Animal Crossing on my phone?
Yeah.
No. And then people kept going on about it. It's like, oh, well, it's free because it's, sort of monetized or microtransaction thing. I was like, oh, well, I'll just dip in and have a look. And then as soon as, they started going little animal creatures, I was just like, oh. Yeah. I was just smiling, and I was like, you know what, why not have Animal Crossing on my phone for when I've got a bit of downtime waiting for a friend or something, and I'm on the train, or this episode of Gotham is a bit boring but I still want to watch it. Play Animal Crossing.
Yeah, fair enough. We were discussing before the show, I had kind of a similar reaction in that I don't really want a microtransaction-driven Animal Crossing, a stripped-down version. I think I'd kind of enjoy it more to wait for the inevitable sort of fully-fledged Switch release. The way you've described it there, now I want to download it, because it's free anyway, so I could just give it a go. It'd be fine. Yeah, I'll probably play it. Yeah, it's fine.
That's what I thought. Send me your ID tag when you do. We can visit each other's camps.
Yep. Okay, definitely.
And there's a holiday event where you get sort of Christmas clothes and stuff.
Of course there is.
Christmas furniture. Who doesn't need Christmas furniture?
Yeah.
Have you got any honourable mentions?
Nothing much which we haven't already talked about. There's Tacoma, which I briefly mentioned. I really enjoyed that game. I had that down as favourite world. Yeah, if you can find, I think it's on sale at the moment actually, or at least it was quite recently. It's well worth picking up, especially at budget price, and it's a nice world to spend a couple of hours in. Nothing else that I haven't like mentioned in other categories. I do want to say that Sonic Mania, despite, like, I only talked about it in WoW moments and music. It's just a really good game, and it's one of my favourite games this year.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, otherwise that's it.
We've covered it.
We have.
You can ignore all other best of lists because it's done.
Yeah, we are the official one.
Yes. So, and then we have one more episode of this year. Can you believe it?
Next one to the season finale. We'll be on to season four.
Are we gonna say what the next episode is?
I mean, you can probably work it out. I mentioned at the start of the episode that it's because there's a certain film coming out in the next couple of weeks. If you can imagine, you know, what big film that might be, you'll probably know what we're going to talk about next time.
Yeah, because Murder on the Orient Express has come out already, so it's not that.
No.
Three
Billboards
doesn't
come out till January, which I'm still annoyed about.
What's that?
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, the new Martin McDonagh film, which I've been looking forward to. It doesn't get released over here till January, which I'm...
Is that the In Bruges guy?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, Suburbicon, is that out?
It is out, and it's kind of, it's not done, it's been slated.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
And then what was the one about Stalin?
The death of Stalin. I don't think he's showing locally. I haven't seen it at any rate.
But, really? God. It'll come to the brew house of indie cinema.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
Yeah. So it's the other film that's not those.
No, not any of those, yeah.
The other film, the one and only film before Christmas that our audience will be waiting for.
Yep.
And we're going to review it on the next show. So,
yes,
we should probably think about booking our tickets.
We should, yeah.
But that's it for now. Best games of 2017, as told by Argue the Toss.
Yep.
Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.